I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We have our Friday features for you. In Faith Matters, how one woman turned her own personal struggles into a lifetime of working to solve some of the world's most intractable problems. And, of course, we have the Barbershop Guys. That's in just a few minutes. But first, our weekly political chat. President-elect Obama is quickly assembling his cabinet. First, he unveiled his economic team, and then his top national security advisors were rolled out this week. Nearly all of his picks so far have years of experience in Washington. But now some progressives are starting to wonder if this is the change they voted for. To talk more about this, we're joined by NPR's political editor Ken Rudin and syndicated columnist David Sirota. Welcome to you both. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Michelle.
David, I want to start with you. Your column this week was called Dear Leader, or How Our Dear Leader Will Rule. Let me just read the first sentence. Judging by the proliferation of capital letters in the email correspondence I received, many seem worried that Barack Obama may not deliver the promised change we believe in. So are all of his cabinet picks setting off alarm bells, or are some in particular?
No, I think it's the highest profile ones. I mean, I think it's at a thematic level, the idea that the economic team has been, you know, people thought that Obama had campaigned, and he certainly did campaign against deregulation and free trade, and he stacked his economic team with a bunch of essentially people who've got a record of deregulating the economy and pushing free trade deals like NAFTA. And on the national security team, you know, people remember Obama campaigning against the war, and his entire national security team is filled with people who were for the war. And so I think people are saying, you know, what's happening here? I'm a little worried that these appointments suggest something about policy. You know, the old adage, personnel is policy. Obama is really saying, when you listen to what he's saying, he is saying, you know, personnel isn't policy. I'm the policy. My policies will be implemented by the people I'm hiring. But, you know, I think appearances mean something, and people are concerned about them.
I'm going to hear, David, from you in a couple minutes about your answer to the people who have these concerns. But first, I want to turn to Ken and say, Ken, you and I started the week talking about this issue. What are you hearing? Are you hearing the same thing that David is? What's the word I'm looking for? Ideological divide on this?
Well, you certainly heard the word experience more than you heard the word change when Barack Obama was announcing his cabinet picks, both on the economic front and the foreign policy front. And, of course, Hillary Clinton did vote for the war, as did his pick for Vice President Joe Biden. But, of course, that was a long time ago, and both have long since been against the war. But I'm hearing also a lot of progressives are saying, you know, this is not what we voted for. Now, there is some talk about some other members of Congress, them bringing them into the administration as well. Xavier Becerra, a congressman from California, from Los Angeles, has been mentioned as U.S. trade rep, and he is certainly not a free trader. Raul Grijalva from Tucson, Arizona, talking about either perhaps Interior Secretary or maybe also U.S. trade. Again, very concerned about border security, immigration, border trade. These are two liberal members of Congress that perhaps, I don't know if it'll be a bone to the left, but certainly they're on Barack Obama's list. But then again, there are also people like Jane Harmon, who, you know, Nancy Pelosi has made clear from the beginning that she felt she was very weak on standing up to Bush on you know, the incursion into Iraq and on intelligence matters. And she's been named as a possible person on the cabinet as well. Jim Oberstar, who is a pro-life, a moderate from Minnesota congressman, also named for perhaps a possible name for transportation. So for that, you know, for all the change that the Obama voters thought they were getting, a lot of them think that, you know, that word no longer exists.
David, your column is actually pretty tough. One of the reasons it's titled Dear Leader is that you argue that liberals, progressives, whatever term you prefer, are actually confused. It isn't that Obama is the product of a movement, but he is the movement.
Right, and I think that's a really important point, which is that Ronald Reagan was really the product of the conservative movement. And I think Barack Obama was not the product of a progressive movement. He saw a situation where the progressive movement was rather weak, and he created a movement about himself. Now, I don't say that to denigrate Barack Obama. What he seized an opportunity, and I think he created a movement that is organized fundamentally around the idea that Barack Obama will make the right decisions, whatever those decisions are. People who are in that movement, sure, they feel strongly about various issues, but the organizing theme of that movement is that Barack Obama will make these decisions properly. And so the difficulty with that that is that if he's got a movement organized around that theme, then he doesn't really owe anybody. There's very little leverage that, say, labor unions or environmental groups have over him. It's hard to make demands if he's got a movement that's organized, as I sort of said with tongue in cheek, around the dear leader.
But if that's the case, though, then isn't that an argument for why, even if people have differences of opinion with people like Hillary Clinton and Bob Gates on policy, that they in fact can trust that they will be carrying out Obama's mandate because he is the person who has the political will, who has the capital, as it were, to keep them in line, if you want to put it that way?
Well, I think that there's something to that. I mean, I think that it's true. We can't just simply say personnel is policy. And that's what I say in my column. You can't really say that personnel is the policy. But I think it's a little bit of a stretch to say the personnel, that is the record of the people being put into power, has nothing to do with the policy. I mean, there's no real historical precedent for that either. I do believe that what Barack Obama says, that he's hiring people to effectuate his vision. I absolutely believe that he thinks that's the case. And in many ways, I think that is the case. But to say that you know, having a national security team that's mostly hawks or having an economic team that has really been ideologically connected to free trade and deregulation, saying that that will have no impact on policy, I think that's a stretch too.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with syndicated columnist David Sirota. He's in Denver, and NPR political editor Ken Rudin in Washington for our weekly conversation about politics. Ken, are there any signs that the Obama administration or the president-elect Obama is concerned about the restiveness from the liberal wing of the party? For example, liberal bloggers went after John Brennan, who was reported to have been Obama's top pick for CIA chief. And some say that led to Brennan's withdrawing his name from consideration, rather that he was pressured to do so.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, it's one way to look. You could always look at Hillary Clinton and just see her as somebody who voted to give the president the authority to go to the war in Iraq in 2002 and saying, well, she's a hawk. She has made some kind of incendiary comments about Iran, too. But, I mean, the thought of her as a conservative or as a hawk in this administration, I think, is not exactly the way the Obama people certainly see it. And I don't think that's the way Hillary Clinton sees it as well. And also, you know, David makes the important point that Ronald Reagan was a creation, or at least a creator, of the conservative movement. And yet when he ran for president, the first time he picked a real liberal, Richard Schweiker, as a senator, as his running mate. And in 1980, when he finally won the nomination, he picked George H.W. Bush, who was seen as a moderate. So it's not that Reagan took the conservatives for granted by going over to the other side by picking running mates, but Barack Obama knows that the country needs solutions, and less, I think some of them are more pragmatic than ideological, and that's the way he's looking. And there's also a lot of pressure on him as well from Republicans now. I don't know what power Republicans have anymore. There's very few left in Congress. But again, he did promise, Barack Obama did seem to promise, that he would name some Republicans to cabinet posts, and we'll see if he names some of those as well.
So there hasn't he, though? Isn't Bob Gates? I think Bob
Gates is less ideological, and he was asked about that at a press conference. And I think he picked Bob Gates not because he's a Republican, but because he wanted to stay the policy and help deal with the withdrawal. But again, there were some conservatives who were being mentioned as possible cabinet or administrative positions, and so you can see Obama being tugged from both the left and the right.
But there's one issue that we haven't really talked about, which is this: the underlying circumstances are so extreme. I mean, David, you said in your column, you said there's truth to the notion that personnel is policy. Crises can make radicals out of former establishmentarians. The president-elect's initial declarations imply a boldly progressive agenda. I guess what I'm wondering is, aren't the circumstances, particularly on the economic side, so extreme or perceived to be such that there's just going to be a demand for bold moves, whether that's his inclination or not, whether that's the inclination of his economic team or not, David?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think that the elite economic consensus has changed. You saw Larry Summers, who was one of the biggest ideological pushers or advocates of deregulation over the last year, has basically moved in a much more progressive direction. So I think you're right. The circumstances will move a lot of this. I do think I want to just say, take issue with one thing that Ken said, which I think is important. You know, this idea about what's pragmatic, what's ideological. when I look at Barack Obama's team, frankly, I see a very ideological team. I see people who were committed to deregulation and committed to free trade, not looking at the data. I see people who were, if you were for the Iraq war, and if you were Hillary Clinton, who was saying on the campaign trail that she was threatening to obliterate Iran, that doesn't seem very pragmatic. So what's interesting to me here is that the term pragmatic is being used in juxtaposition to or opposition to progressive, when in fact what it really should be used in opposition to is all of the policies that got us to this point.
Ken, you have about a minute. You want to?
I agree with that completely. And of course, the rhetoric that David talks about with Hillary Clinton is exactly right. And I think that's why these other folks like Grijalva and Becerra are being mentioned. Not again, as I said earlier, as a bone to the left, but I think he certainly knows that it's a liberal constituency that elected him. And obviously, there are some positions that need to be filled, and he may look that way in his subsequent picks.
Ken, we started just 30 seconds left. We started the week talking about yet unresolved Senate races. There was one in Georgia and there's still one in Minnesota. How is that? What's the latest?
Well, it's about 300-vote lead, if you believe the Norm Coleman numbers, but it won't be just there. About several thousand undecided ballots that will be first seriously looked at on December 16th, and the state will declare a winner on December 19th, but it's gotten very contentious, very ugly. Both sides clearly do not trust the other. It's Al Franken and Norm Coleman in Minnesota.
And in Georgia, what happened?
Georgia, Saxby Chambliss, basically the African-American turnout was not there. The Republicans were very energized. They wanted to make the case that Barack Obama shouldn't have a filibuster-proof majority, a rubber stamp, and the Republicans really got their message out. Okay. Jim Martin was not the perfect candidate, but the fact that he came so close on November 4th shows that the Democrats are looking better in the South than they had been.
All right. Here with us in Washington, NPR political editor Ken Rudin. By popular demand, his political junkie column has become a daily blog, and you can check it out at npr.org. We're also joined by syndicated columnist David Sirota. His latest book is entitled The Uprising, an unauthorized tour of the populist revolt scaring Wall Street and Washington. He's with us from Denver. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.